JP Chi, Sound Therapy Radio on CGSF. Another great episode of our show coming up. We have singer-songwriter Glenn Chatton, filmmaker Ian McKenzie, and we'll be calling Charles Eisenstein. He is a writer and has a book called Sacred Economics. And we will be talking about creativity, love, and social change. So stay tuned. And we'll also be doing a live call-in to Occupy Pantages, a number of people fighting for housing in the downtown east side. JP Chi on Sound Therapy Radio. Be right back.
Nonprofit or grassroots community organization with no time or money for research? Action Research Exchange facilitates connections between community organizations that need research and SFU students who can take on that research for course credit. A Simon Fraser University student can help make your social or environmental project a reality. Proposals are accepted year-round, and every summer ARX releases a new batch of these community project proposals on its website. Submit yours now and take part in a program unlike any other in the Lower Mainland. Visit www.sfpirg.ca/ARX to apply and to find out more about Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group.
All right, we're back. JP Chi here on Sound Therapy Radio. So, I would like to read a public service announcement that is available until December 3rd, 2011. What? Inuit prints, Japanese inspiration. What do you get when you take a Japanese printmaker and place the person in Cape Dorset in the high Canadian Arctic? You get this amazing show, Inuit Prints, Japanese Inspiration. This show shares the great story of an artistic encounter and its results. The show is on until Saturday, December 3rd, this Saturday, at the National Nikkei Museum and Heritage Center, 6688 South Oaks Crescent in Burnaby. Admission is by donation. That's amazing. Go to the website for times and other details, nikkeiplace.org, N-I-K-K-E-I-P APLACE.org. All right, so we're back in the studio here at Simon Fraser Campus on CGSF, and you can find us on 89.3 Cable FM. And yeah, we used to be on Telus HD, but they removed the signs, so that's now just a guess. All right, today we're going to talk about creativity, love, and social change. Obviously, there's this new meme in the world called Occupy, and there's a YouTube video called Occupy Love and an accompanying website that Ian McKenzie and Charles Eisenstein and Volker Ripper have put together. So we're going to talk a little bit about that because that's kind of the inspiration from the show. But to get started, we have the Honorable Right Minister of Amazing Environmental Songs, Mr. Glenn Chatton. Welcome back to the studio, Mr. Glenn. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fantastic, Jay. How are you, buddy?
I'm great when you're in the studio.
Thanks, man.
So start us off with some
Sure, this is a new song. This is a new song, just brand new in the last month or so. And it came from actually experiencing the Occupy, and that's why I thought I'd bring it out today and tonight for us. And it was after talking to Takwa, who was
Takwa,
thank you, who was there at the time when I was there, was facing a lot of heat, no pun intended, from the police and the fire chief for having to have their or wanting to put out their sacred fire. So from that, I wrote this song.
Of the darkness, in the midst of the rage, constant light of reflection stares at the face of our age. There is no longer a middle, there's no longer an end. In the threadbare pockets of justice, there's no more left to spend. Look away to our past. Look away to our past. The healing smoke of sweet grass. What is real between us? As we hide behind slogan sign, we can't keep the smoke in the mirrors that has ravaged humankind. Come back to the center where soul meets the heart, away from the star-bright illusion, with this new birth and this new start. Look away to our past. Look away to our past. The smell of sweet grass. What we've done to each other fills my heart with disgrace. Profit margin idealism, what price, cost, and waste. Look at the old native hearts, spirit filled with cleansing view. Treat ourselves with dignity, from these old we have something new. Look away to our past. Look away past. The smoke of sweet grass. Look away to our past. Look away to our past. The smoke of sweet grass. with the smoke of sweet grass.
Chatting to Tukwa and the ever provocative, contentious Sacred Fire of Occupy Vancouver. Yeah, there's a video on YouTube if you'd like to see how the it was extinguished. It was a very dramatic, somewhat violent incident. So we're back here, and we want to get Mr. Ian McKenzie on the microphone here, because we're also going to make a phone call to Charles Eisenstein, who's a writer. But Ian, talk a bit about your project, Occupy Love, and how that all came about.
Sure. Essentially, I started working with Velko Ripper, the director, who has actually been following what we would call this sort of global paradigm shift for over 2 years already. He's filmed in South America and Mexico and other places abroad, following essentially this awakening, whatever you want to call it. And so I came on board in August of 2010 to help out with the film. And essentially, we ended up getting to the point where we had a lot of the sort of philosophical underpinnings of what was happening, but we didn't have an expression of it, and certainly not in North America.
Oh, wow.
And then in Brooklyn, of course, Occupy movement happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And we knew that we had it, that that was the expression of the movement that had been rippling around the world.
That's incredible foresight.
Indeed.
Well, I guess you could feel the time was coming, right? So
it's true.
You know, it was going to manifest itself somehow, right?
Exactly.
So that's cool. So talk a bit about, like, you know, kind of discovering this, the manifestation, and what that meant for you. Because, you know, it's like, oh, it's here. Like,
you mean the Occupy movement in general?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you'd been kind of documenting this.
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, I felt. I knew it as soon as I saw in the weeks leading up to September 17th of 2007, when I saw that the call had been put out, and there was this rumblings that, you know, there was actually people that were going to go down there to Wall Street, and something about it, I just felt like this could be, you know, this could be it. This could be the one that essentially takes, you know, is the tipping point in some ways. And I think the people who immediately thought it was a protest, you know, people are going to march once or twice, go home.
Yeah.
They totally missed the boat. And it was actually not for 55 days of the occupation that the first mainstream article came out that I feel actually got it.
That's right.
And that was the Rolling Stone.
Oh, so 55 days.
55 days after the occupation started before they understood even a hint of what it really means.
That's 2 months.
Yeah. A music magazine at that.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, Rolling Stone, right?
That's
Rolling
right.
Rolling Stone. Yeah, Rolling Stone did it. Yeah, because at first, you know, as it's 500 people, it's going to be over, that kind of thing. And then I think when the pilots did their walk, that was a really visually stunning, you know, pretty amazing. It was almost like, is this real or from a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you went down there, right?
I did.
Yeah, so talk a bit about what that was about for you.
Well, it's interesting that Zuccotti Park, I actually thought was much larger. When you look at photos and things, you think like, there's, you know, it must be a massive square, and you go down there, it's actually not very big at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would say the Vancouver Art Gallery was even a larger physical space on the lawn than Zuccotti Park was.
Yeah.
So, but that really wasn't the message there, right? You go down there, and it was just this, you could feel how different it was from just even around the corner, like just what a typical street space is like.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, suddenly you see the park, and all of a sudden you're just sort of overcome. You're like, oh my God, this is like people. And the humanness of it all was disarming. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, I can imagine. And because was there any grass in Zuccotti Park?
Like in little pots, kind of, you know, around. But it's primarily actually like a paved.
Yeah, it's kind of like Vancouver Club. Would it be that, you know, there's a concrete park outside of that?
It's kind of, yeah, exactly. But it's not. It's not really a park that we think, you know, grass everywhere and plants. It's there's trees, but they're in these like structures. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, kind of contrast that with Vancouver, because. Well, here's kind of my thinking with the Occupy Wall Street in Vancouver. People have an expectation of Wall Street, and that's what occupations look like. And, you know, there's about 8 million people in New York City, right? So people have this vision of what Occupy Vancouver should have been, and you know, the maturity and all that. And I think that created a lot of expectations with people within the movement, what it was supposed to be, and there was a lot of conflict around that. So, and then the manifestation was different because we had a lot of kind of the issues that Vancouver's facing with homelessness, drugs, and you know, the lack of affordable social housing. So contrast the two vibes, and you know, were you able to see the kind of same type of vibe in Vancouver that you saw in New York? Because what was represented in the mainstream media was you know, kind of
No, I definitely different. Feel that every occupation has their own unique, you know, sort of essence, and I think that Vancouver, obviously, again, because of those issues, the camps themselves always tend to, you know, they tend to bring out the shadows of the city, of whatever it is that they already have. That they're, one teacher, a yoga teacher I followed, talked about how it's essentially all that we repress coming back into the light.
That's
and
right.
so,
That's
in
right.
that sense, every occupation is different. But I'd say that the similarities, though, were just a unique openness of almost everybody there. Just a sense of, I see you as a human being. You know, I, even though I don't agree with you, or at least we can talk about it. You know what I mean? Or at least we can agree that nobody knows where we're going right now.
Yeah.
Right? That nobody's actually in charge, and that we need to actually sit down and talk. That part was consistent. And that really flew over, I think, the mainstream media here as well.
Yeah. So there's, you know, I wear the Occupy Vancouver button around, and I get kind of these strange, serious looks. And I had approached someone who's a longtime activist and is now trying to work within the system, and I asked, hey, what do you think about, you know, Occupy Vancouver? And, you know, he's consternating, and I hear this a lot. He says, oh, there's too many mixed messages and all these things, and they should have had one speaker speaking on behalf of everybody. And, you know, we know what this movement is about. It's about giving everybody a voice and letting them speak. And were those same challenges also in Wall Street when you saw that? Because, you know, I think what we see in Vancouver is sometimes this, you know, romantic view of Occupy Wall Street, but it probably has very similar demons. And what did you see?
No, absolutely. I think that, you know, there was issues with, say, the GA being, you know, talking about things that maybe weren't as relevant, say, for the whole movement. There's very similar challenges. I think that whatever city you're in, they think that they're the only ones that have those challenges. And I think I've spoken with people who've been to many Occupies as well, and they say, yeah, they all have similar issues, and that they're not something to hold up against the movement and say, you know, that I guess this one was a failure. Do you know what I mean? Which kind of seems to be happening here. You get people that support, say, Occupy Wall Street, but they say, oh, but Vancouver, it was a train wreck. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's just because this is where we live, so it's more in our face.
Yes.
And we're unwilling to look at that shadow ourselves.
Mm. Yeah, and I know it's out there because we're all human. And, you know, in some of the meetings with respect to Occupy Vancouver, it's like, well, why don't we just learn from what's going on there? And there's, I think, differences between, you know, Occupy Vancouver. And it's actually, it can be nimble and smaller and tight-knit, whereas in Wall Street, there's like 30,000 people to march. And how do you do like a GA with like thousands of people? It's like, you know, mic check. Like,
this is the thing, stuff's in the works for, you know, either it's using electronic or say cell phone voting systems are being developed behind the scenes.
Like,
I mean, amazingly cool creative stuff is coming out that a lot of people don't know about right now.
Yeah.
They think, you know, tents have dissolved, so that's it. But no, there's tons going on behind the scenes.
No, it is amazing. Because I was in Surrey for TEDx SFU, and I had the badge, and I was in Zeller's eating, like, a breakfast. And she's like, are you hiding out? And I go, what am I hiding? I'm not hiding. You know, you can see me. And I'm here for TEDx SFU. And the CEO of Hootsuite is a big fan of the Occupy movement, and how Hootsuite was this kind of alternative way to get Twitter out and helped Cairo and you know, helped a lot of and so he's very supportive of the movement, and he was talking about how each has their own little media thing, and I was like, oh yeah, bring it on. So we're not hiding. It's like kind of pushing on an anthill, right? It's like, okay, the anthill's out of the way, but we've dispersed. And
I mean, I think it's important though to recognize that, you know, the quote-unquote lack of demands is not quite the same thing as waiting for something new to arise, which is quite different.
I mean,
a great metaphor is like in meditation, you know, you're training to essentially watch thoughts come and go. You don't attach to them. You don't attach to, say, negative emotions or things that habitual mind patterns, right? But the goal of meditation is not to come up with the great idea, right? It's to stop attaching and let whatever needs to come arise.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we're at, you know, by holding space, we let something new arise. And what we need are new ideas and new imagination.
Yeah, time and space, those are always things I'm trying to accumulate because, right, they just reveal themselves. You don't have to really think about it. You have to let it come. All right, we're going to take a break right now, and we're going to do a phone call to Charles Eisenstein, who's, whereabouts is he?
He lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay, there you go. So take a quick break here on Sound Therapy Radio. On CGSF 90.1 FM.
I'm hungry.
Me too.
And why is she eating that stuff? She must have picked it up from her trip back home. The smell's making me sick. Don't you think she should eat it somewhere else?
No, that's disrespectful toward Parveen. Actually, I think it's great that we can enjoy different foods.
What would you do if you were this witness? Safe Harbor Respect for All provides diversity workshops across Canada with funding from the Government of Canada. Visit safeharbor.ca. Respect for All. Pass it on.
Are you underage and feeling shut out of the Vancouver music scene by myriads of 19-plus music venues? Ever wish someone would start an all-ages venue in Vancouver where you could listen to awesome live music without having to convince your parents that East Hastings isn't as bad as it's cracked up to be? Well, the Safe Amplification Site Society, or SafeAmp, is a not-for-profit organization dedicated to do exactly that. Through public and private donations, as well as through public fundraisers, SafeAmp hopes to raise enough money to establish a permanent, all-ages, self-sustaining space for music and other arts events in Vancouver. The venue will be an alcohol and drug-free environment and will be available to all members of the society to organize any kind of cultural event free of charge. To learn more or become a member of the Safe Amplification Site Society, go to www.safeamp.org or look for them on your social network of choice. That's www.safeamp.org. Let's open the doors to good music for youth in Vancouver.
All right, JPG on Sound Therapy Radio here on CGSF 90.1 FM. We have Charles Eisenstein on the line. Hello there from Harrisburg.
Hello.
So we have Ian McKenzie in the studio. He was talking a little bit about your project. Tell us how that all came about.
Are you talking to Ian or me?
Oh, sorry, you, Charles.
Yeah. Well, Ian just kind of contacted me out of the blue. I can't remember. I think he must have read one of my books, and Ian's a filmmaker, and he's been looking for some way to present what's going on today, what's in the air with the Occupy movements and with all of the changes and crises that are happening that people sense are on happening on a much deeper level than anything that can be fixed with the proposals and methods that are on the political radar, and so he was trying to, you know, he's looking for material, and anyway, he shows up at my door, and we hung out for a week, and he filmed stuff, and I don't know, Ian, do you want to continue it from there?
Sure. I mean, I think you're being a little too humble here. I mean, Charles is an incredible visionary, and I came across his material last year when, actually, funny enough, I was drowning in recyclable bags. I had a moment where I was looking at these recyclable bags in my closet, and I was like, what's going on here? I thought recyclable bags were supposed to be the solution to our issue of overconsumption, and here I was now just in a slightly slower but still drowning in consumption. And so literally like 2 hours later, I came across a quote from one of Charles's books called The Ascent of Humanity, where he actually pretty much talks exactly about that problem, why the same type of thinking cannot save our problems that we have today. And so from there, I said, wow, this guy's got, he's onto something. So I read that book. And then I was excited when he produced another book after that called Sacred Economics, came out this year. So I read that, and the ideas in there I found were so timely and key for the discourse that we need to have right now, that I knew I had to fly out and actually make a film, because film being the language of the web now, it's something that can just get that meme out much faster and quicker.
So Charles, give us a kind of a bit of an overview for Sacred Economics, because I'm actually an economics graduate, and you know, supply and demand, and the dialogue that is in
economics in the corporate world, which I have a background, is very limited. Even the use of words now, from an artist perspective, I go back. It's like, wow, I was using the words that way. And so talk a bit about the book and how that really, what the inspiration was.
Yeah, well, the basic overview of the book, the first third of the book essentially talks about how we've gotten to the point where we are and what exactly that point is. How the money system that we have today drives us relentlessly toward growth at the expense of everything else, toward the dissolution of community, which we see all around us, in some places more than others. And from what I hear in Vancouver, the community is still healthier than in many other places, toward the ravaging of the ecosystem, toward concentration of wealth, how all these things are built into the money system, and how that leads toward an irremediable crisis. And so then the second part of the book is what we can transition toward, and in fact what's already wanting to happen or almost happening, almost unrestrainable. So I lay out a vision for what would a sacred economy look like. And what does sacred economy mean, even? But one way to see it is that it's an economy that encourages and preserves and develops the kinds of things that are becoming sacred to us today, whereas once perhaps growth was sacred to us or the conquest of nature, today very different things are becoming important to us. And so then the third part of the book goes to more of the personal level. How do we embody this transition ourselves? How do we contribute to it in a really practical way? And how do we shift our thinking into alignment with a sacred economy?
Yeah, when we talk about the micro level, and this is kind of the premise within Sound Therapy Radio, which is a very kind of peer-oriented approach to kind of mental health. I mean, this transition for people to move from this, that's, for lack of a better word, the unsacred world to where we want to get to. Like, talk a bit about how, people process that, because I'm sure for people who kind of understand it, it's like not something, hey, I'm going to kind of move to this way in life.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people understand it, at least intellectually, and resonate with it. It's kind of the tune of the times. Things like interconnectedness, the idea that other beings are not separate from ourselves, that they're part of ourselves. I mean, we're really starting to understand that when it comes to ecology and seeing how what we do to the earth, we're also doing to ourselves. So people are starting to get that intellectually, but we still have a lot of habits left over from what I call the age of separation, where